This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, listeners. Just a heads up that whilst we strive to have the best audio quality that we can on Trek FM, sometimes things just don't go according to plan. This episode, Nick suffered some technical difficulties, and therefore the audio quality of his component is a little bit off. We usually rely on a backup recording, but that was also unusable. However, we do hope that you enjoy listening to this episode on the Ships of Discovery, as much as we enjoyed making it, and we also thank you for listening to The Edge and Trek FM.
It's Mary Chifo, Laurel on Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am but one of your co-hosts, Brandi Jackola, and joining me today is also Liam Smart. Liam, how are you today?
I'm great, Brandi. What about you?
It's been a frantic day, but now that I'm here sitting with you, it's just all...
It's just a beautiful vision, isn't it? Seeing me on camera.
It is. Always a beautiful vision. But you're not the only person that's joining us today. Of course, we also have Nick Collinson. Nick, how are you on this fine day?
Hey, Brandi. I am doing pretty well. Having a pretty good day so far. It is just the morning here, but I'm hopeful.
Yes. And it's I am in your afternoon the day before. So time zone.
My brain is never going to be able to work this out.
No, that's why I have my phone to do it. So I'm just like, what time is it in Australia right now? Okay. Anyway, so our since we have last recorded, our first episode on our own of The Edge has come out, and we have received some very positive responses on that. So thanks, everybody, for that. And so today... we are going to talk about stuff and things, but specifically in that stuff and things.
What kind of stuff could we talk about today?
Oh, I don't know.
What tangents do we go off on?
Oh, honey, I'm the queen of tangents. You know this. I can go off. You can start at one place and end up in a completely different place with me if you let me run wild. But thankfully, no one lets me do that.
You're like a Wikipedia.
So
you just sort of...
just keep clicking those blue links until you get 404 page not found. You're like, finally, I'm at the end. Finally. She doesn't have anything else to say.
I was studying for a physics exam once, and half an hour later, I was reading about orca whales. It's like, oh, I don't quite understand how I ended up here, but it was deeply satisfying.
That's fair.
I do love my Wikipedia.
Okay. Well, today we have decided that we are going to talk about the ships of Discovery. And for the purposes of this particular episode, we are focusing pretty much only on the Starfleet ships because there are a lot of ships.
I didn't even realize there were this many ships.
There are so many ships. And eventually the word ships is going to start sounding weird because we're saying it so much. It's already starting for me. So
what other synonyms do we have?
Vessels.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Wagon trains in the stars.
Space boats.
Space. I'm rewriting the theme song from Love Boat in my head as we speak to be Space Boat. The Space Boat, soon we'll be leaving Starbase 41. The Space Boat. Okay, I'm going to stop. Anyway. Yay! Fantastic.
And I finally heard Brandy sing. It's only been a year.
Oh. I'm so sorry. I will make an effort to sing more on every podcast. People are groaning as I speak. All right. So let's start with hero ships, shall we? And we would like to thank Nick for the very comprehensive spreadsheet that he put together that has blown my mind.
There's so much information on here.
It blows my mind in the best possible way. I'm just like salivating looking at all of these. So pretty. So pretty.
He's even made his own little info up about things too.
Yes.
All the made up stuff is just is my own headcanon and we don't need to talk about it. But I was very much channeling my much younger self when I was doing this because, as I think I've mentioned a few other times, when I was sort of younger and first getting into Star Trek, and also sort of, I guess, the early days of the internet, a lot of the stuff I would do, and I realized this a bit recently, is I didn't watch that much of the show, relatively speaking. Like, I would go out and rent a videotape with two episodes of, like, usually Next Gen or Voyager, and just watch it. But I'd always go back to the same ones that would be, like, you know, one that stuck out to me was the Voyager episode Message in a Bottle, because that was the one with the Prometheus in it, because I was really into this, like, starship design and, like, cool ships and stuff. So I would spend hours and hours on the internet, especially on there was that website Ex Astra Scientia, which just had so much information about schematics of the ships and, like, how long they were, how many decks, how many torpedo launchers does the Akira class have. I think it's 15. So, yeah, I was kind of channeling that where I'm like, okay, how much information can I get for all of these ships? And a lot of them turn up in Battle of the Binary Stars. You just have all of these different Federation ships warping in. And they're all, like, individually, like, very well-designed, cool-looking things. And, like, they've made the models of them now through the Starship Collection and all that sort of thing. So I think there's definitely a lot for us to talk about here.
Do you have many ship models, Nick?
I actually only have one. I've got the Shenzhou. It's really hard to get them here.
Well, now you have a friend in the United States that can get you whatever you want. Yeah, we're going to talk about hero ships. I'm just going to say right now, I've always loved ships, and not just starships, but planes and sea vessels, etc., cars, motorcycles. I want to say I inherited that from my father because, yeah, you can pal around with someone and start to get into the things that they like. But I remember being very, very young, like maybe 3 or 4, and being fascinated with all of these things. And that I don't think that's something you can teach at that age. So I just feel like I inherited that. Well, actually, from both my parents. My mom is also really into ships and planes and starships and the like. So I think it's just kind of a family thing. I get really excited talking about things like that. And I have a lot of starship models. I'm running out of space.
Need to hang them from your ceiling.
Oh, that's smart.
And then get those like little kitty glow-in-the-dark things that you stick on the ceiling with, like, stars and that?
Oh, yeah, I used to have some of those. The problem is my bedroom.
Are we in your bedroom right now?
You're in my bedroom right now. You're in my boudoir, gentlemen.
I wonder what the velvet drapes were in the background.
Yeah, exactly. They have lovely ties with tassels on them as well. My ceiling in here is like that popcorn ceiling crap. So I don't think I know I can't stick things to it, but can I stick things in it?
I know from my old high school had that. I know that if you throw a paper airplane dart at it hard enough, it stays there.
I don't think it's quite like that. It's more of a texture thing. But it's still so 1950s, which is when this house was built. So that's not really a surprise. So, but it's my house, mine. Well, mine and
it's anyway. Your own personal
hero class.
Love
hero,
boat.
Yes, no space boat. It's a space boat up in here. A space love boat. up in here. All right. So let's actually talk about some ships. So we're going to start, I think, with the Crossfield class, are we not?
Yes. So the Crossfield class, the class is named after a U.S. test pilot who's named Albert Scott Crossfield. And so this is the class of ship of the Discovery, and also its sister ship, the Glenn.
Yeah, so the Crossfield class, as you said, named after Albert Scott Crossfield. So he was the first person to fly at twice the speed of sound in 1953. So that would have been about 678 meters per second he was flying, assuming that the air was 14 degrees and at a constant pressure, which is, for Brandy, 1,500 miles an hour. And for the rest of the world, 2,400 odd kilometers per hour. Yes. So, but he died in 1984 in a plane accident. So.
Well, he died as he lived.
Do you know, doing a lot of this, a lot of people died in planes. So.
I would imagine. Mm. I do remember reading in, it was like the design notes or something from when, like, season one was just coming out, and they were talking about how they wanted the designs of all of the new Starfleet ships that they come up with to sort of to represent sort of the, what they were calling it, the X-planes, which was all of these experimental aircraft from around that period, like the 50s and 60s. That were just like
the X-15s.
Yeah, always trying to go faster, and so it makes sense that a lot of them are named after test pilots from that era.
Yeah.
Well, test pilots were super important in that whole process. And not everybody was good enough to do it. It was a very narrow class of men. Sadly, no women were allowed to do it. And it makes me wonder how many women could have done it just as well, but we'll never know. It wasn't just about courage or anything like that. It was about skill, and it was about intuition just as much. So, yeah, test pilots, they do dangerous work, but without their work, there is no progress.
So, the two ships in the Crossfield class, they're obviously the Discovery, but also the Glenn.
I'm pretty sure, even without looking at the spreadsheet, what those are named for or who they are named for.
Yes. So, well, first we'll do the namesake of the show, the Discovery. So the Discovery was named after a lot of ships have been called the Discovery in the past. So originally the main two that I found were in the late 1700s. There were two HMS Discoveries. One of them was in the fleet of one of Captain Cook's expeditions to the Pacific, and was also quite important as an accompanying ship in the rediscovery of Hawaii in the late 1770s. And there was another one that was the lead ship in the exploration of the west coast of North America. So the Discovery, the name Discovery was used for a lot of ships of exploration, including exploratory voyages to both polar regions. Now, for those who don't know, Captain Cook was the first captain to make European settlement, or at least European findings, of the east coast of Australia. Because we know that the Dutch were the first people to find Australia, but they got to the Kimberley region or the Pilbara region in Western Australia and thought it was just a horrible desert, which it kind of is over there. So the first European settlers were on the east coast of Australia.
So the Dutch were the first white people to discover Australia, is what you're saying?
Yes, first Europeans. Yeah.
There had, of course, been people here for a good 65,000 years at least before then.
Yeah, same thing goes for my country, so.
So, and the other one in the Crossfield class was the Glenn, which was named after John Glenn, who was the first American to orbit the Earth in 1962. Obviously, the first person was Yuri Gagarin the year before, but yeah, John Glenn was the first American to do so.
Indeed, and that was the whole thing here, is that it was a race to see who could get somewhere the fastest. And so after World War II ended, we basically imported a lot of German scientists to work on rockets and fuel and design, etc., so that we could catch up to the Russians, because there was this whole Cold War thing that had been going on forever.
Operation Paperclip.
So, yep, exactly. Operation Paperclip. Well done. So, yeah, there were a lot of Germans who worked in the space program at that time. And in fact, if you want to know more about it, I recommend watching the movie The Right Stuff, although it does have some factually inaccurate things in it. I still think it's a really good representation of the people that made all of this happen. And then you can go watch the Star Trek Enterprise episode First Flight right after that.
There's a lot of information that I was looking at whilst looking up all of these people. And the film that you mentioned there, Brandy, came up a fair bit.
Yeah, it's a good film. It's a long film, but it's worth it. For me, it was just like candy because, again, talking about planes and space vessels and, you know, ships, you know, I love that. So I really enjoyed that movie. And I hadn't seen it in probably about 15 years, but I had to watch it for an episode of Warp 5 back in the day. And so we watched it again. Dave and I watched it again. It's just like I had a new appreciation for it. I think the older I get, the more aware I am of what I don't know. So so yeah, it's a good movie. The writer of it is based on a book. The writer of the book did not like the movie, very famously. So you could also pick up the book. Liam, what was your first reaction when you saw the ship design for Discovery?
Well, the first time that ship was shown, it was in that really low quality render of it coming out of an asteroid from, was it San Diego Comic-Con in 2016?
So.
It was 17. It was a fair while ago. I wasn't really noticing too much of the ship. To be honest, I was just excited that a new Star Trek was coming. And I was sort of just blown away by the fact that was occurring. I didn't have any issue with the fact that there's a lot of holes in the saucer section, how pointy it was. To me, I was just excited. I did, when the later images came out, I did really like the colouring scheme on the nacelle pylons, or whatever they're called, on the back of the ship. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my first thoughts were, yeah, Star Trek. My second thoughts were, I like it and I'm going to like it no matter what.
Yeah, what about you, Nick? What was your first reaction?
Yeah, like I was sort of intrigued by it, and I like they did, like you said, that sort of reveal trailer was kind of the low res thing of it, and it's like you saw like little like close ups of different parts of it, and every bit of that I was like, oh, that looks really cool, and then it comes out and you see all of it together, and I wasn't a huge fan of like the really big triangular like rear section, even though like I was familiar with it because I knew about the old because it was based on the Ralph McQuarrie design of a ship for, and I can't remember when this was they're trying to make it. It was like Star Trek Planet of the Titans, which was like their first attempt at making a feature film, like early 70s, maybe.
Yeah, this was in the, this was part of the lead up to actually getting Star Trek the Motion Picture. And they were going to do a movie, and then they were going to do a television show. And then, you know, so many things happened that project was in developmental hell for several years and went through many different metamorphoses. And what we ended up with was the motion picture, which some people do not like and some people do like. I am a person who does like it. I have always liked it. And seeing it in the theater was absolutely magnificent. But anyway, so as far as my first reaction when I saw this Discovery, I am well versed in the way that digital effects work, visual effects in general. And I know that when 99% of the time when they're showing something like that, it's not finished. Yeah. It doesn't have all of the rendering and details that it's going to have. And so I just thought, oh, that is something I have never seen before. Well done. Well done. This is going to be interesting. I wonder if that circular part spins. It turns out that it spins.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just kind of like, oh, it is spinny. Somebody make a fidget spinner out of the Discovery, please. somebody take a fidget spinner and make it in the shape of Disco. I'd really appreciate that because I like fidget spinners very much.
Take that to the Star Trek company.
I just want credit for the idea and maybe like 5% of the profits. Anyway, so I was just kind of taken aback by the very loud negative reaction to it. And I just kind of went, fans, and
pretty
just
much
went on my way. So, yeah, there were a lot of people that just had things to say. And I'm like, what does it matter what it's shaped? Because in space, there is no reason to have any particular shape of ship. There's no drag. There's no wind speed. There's no atmospheric conditions. It's space. It's a vacuum.
You have deflectors to get rid of all the space dust anyway, so...
Yeah, exactly. So it's just kind of like, what does it matter? Obviously, you can even just make a big sphere or a big cube, or you could do a big pyramid for all you care. It doesn't matter what the shape is. They're all going to fly the same way.
Big pyramids were in SG-1, weren't they? I really need to rewatch that.
Yeah, it's good.
I know. It's so good. It's such a great show.
It's just I don't know what streaming platform it's on.
Here it's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, well, I've got to get Amazon Prime for Picard.
There you go.
We'll see what's on it.
Hopefully it's on Amazon Prime for you.
Fingers crossed.
If not that, it might be on Stan. Yeah,
that is my response to Stan. I don't really like anything that's on Stan.
I have no frame of reference for Stan, so I agree with you.
Australian-specific streaming platform, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I don't even know why it's called Stan. Like.
All right. So we meandered about. Do we have anything else to say about the Glen, seeing as how it's pretty much the exact same design?
I liked that they had it in there to sort of imply that you know, what was happening with Discovery is like a sort of wider-ranging program. And there are like, you know, at least these two ships that are sort of doing the same kind of experiments. And there's that little bit of rivalry between them of how they're doing them. Sometimes they just like reuse, or at least in older versions of the show, they would just like reuse ship models. And it would be like hard to, sometimes they would do it, you know, obviously for cost reasons. It's like, oh, we need a new ship to come in. We'll just like, put a new registry on the same model as the Enterprise or Voyager or whatever. But it's still kind of an interesting little, like, you know, like when you have, I think it's called the Bellerophon shows up in an episode of Deep Space Nine, and it's an Intrepid class, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, that one.
All the sets and everything were just reused from Star Trek Voyager. And it's like, it's a fun sort of reference across. Sometimes it's cool having two of the same class of ship meet each other because it kind of shows that this is like an expansive fleet, and it's not just like one of each type, but it's also cool to see multiple different ones that I think we'll talk about seeing. I definitely did. I think the design of like the Crossfield class in general grew on me a lot as it went along. Like the initial render, I was like, I knew that it was like a initial render and it wasn't going to look exactly like that. But still, I sort of like wasn't convinced. But then eventually, like, it, when you finally see it for real in the show, then they have, like, nice big hero shots and everything of it. It looks really cool.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to bring up about the Discovery and the Glen and the wider Crossfield class, well, two things, actually. The first one is that did they build these ships and then draft Stamets and his co-science guy? Or did they draft them first and then build these ships specifically around the work that both Stamets and the other guy was doing?
I'm not sure.
I would be inclined to believe that the ships were already built and whatever modifications needed to be made were made, simply because they were both pursuing different lines of the same concept and would have different needs on each ship. And they have been trying out multiple things on each ship. So my guess is that it was probably they built the ships first, and then once they got there, okay, I need this, this, and this, and they just redid an engineering section specifically for that research.
Yeah. I think that's probably what it would have – that kind of makes sense. And I really like that it's a science ship, ostensibly, and it's huge. Like, I really – that actually does – strike me as a very kind of Star Trek concept, that it's like the ship might be sort of bigger than, say, the Enterprise, but it's like very specialized towards like just massive multiple scientific experiments going on at once. You know, it's kind of like, you know, an entire university laboratory section in space or something like that.
The second thing, and I've also now developed a third thing, but the... Oh, except I've just forgotten what the third thing was. Anyway, so the second thing was the bits that spin. Like, they'd have to have some really good inertia dampeners so that they don't, you know, smash against the side of the spinny things.
Yeah,
like the gravitron rides that you get at fairgrounds.
I understand that, but when you're going into warp speed, I'm pretty sure that you have to have pretty strong inertial dampeners that.
Well, yeah. So, I don't know.
So a spinning saucer section would be a piece of cake.
I just feel like you'd get seasick if you could see out the window as well. Like, I know I'd get seasick if you can see out the windows and you can say, oh, there goes the pylon. Oh, there goes the pylon.
Well, I don't think many Starfleet officers are in the saucer section with their noses pressed against the window, trying to see who throws up first.
Well, I think that sounds like a challenge.
I guess it depends on, you know, maybe all of the lower decks people would be that, but then maybe they... Yeah, they'll be like, oh, hey, guys, they're going to do the spore drive test. We all got to get to the saucer section, right? It's the best ride ever.
Especially after a few alcoholic beverages.
They just go and hang out and they, like, watch all the new recruits and they, like, hold bets on, like, who's going to throw up first or something.
Yeah, because they didn't have synth the hall yet, so. Yeah.
I was just, like, the first time I saw the thing spinning, I did have to laugh just because at the time I thought it was kind of ridiculous. And obviously it's grown on me and you're just used to it now. But when it first turned up, I think it was something so strange and so new to have like an entire source section of a ship that rotates like that. I don't know. I feel like it's a design or an idea that I had definitely kind of come up with in my head before then. It's like, oh, what if there was a ship that did this?
Yeah, it actually reminded me of something from a video game. I relate almost everything in my life to a video game these days. there's a series of video games, none of which have anything to do with each other, called Final Fantasy.
You might have heard of them.
And Final Fantasy VIII had these places called gardens. I'm not going to explain why they were called that or what any of this had to do with any of the plot. But it turns out they were basically schools. They were like military schools, training schools for kids. But at one point you discover that they're actually mobile and they lift out of the ground and they have this spinny ring, not attached, just, you know, almost like a repulsor lift or something. And you can just travel over land. So yeah, have fun getting across the sea, though. That's not going to happen. But as long as you were near a beach, you could kind of go in shallow waters. But that's what I actually thought of, was that spinny bit. I'll try to find a picture to give you guys reference, but not right now because we're talking.
One last thing I wanted to talk about is just the registry number. Do you reckon there's any specific reason behind 1031?
Yes, there is, because Brian Fuller originally came up with that, and it's because Halloween is his favorite holiday.
Ah, a man after my own heart. Halloween's my favorite holiday.
And I suppose it would be remiss of us not to say something about the whole spore drive thing that the Crossfield class is famous for. What did you think of it, just briefly?
Yeah, but it wasn't really famous for
famous for
classified.
To know. No, you know, famous for us to, that we know about, but I guess in the Trek world that nobody knows about, but some people know about, but they can't talk about.
Right. Well, because, everything went horribly wrong on the Glen. So that was some Silent Hill level stuff that was going on.
I really enjoyed that, actually.
I did too. I was like, this is wonderful, wonderfully creepy. Mm. And I'm looking at a thing and going, what is that? I love that I don't know exactly what that is or what that used to be. Yeah, I'm weird that way.
I just love the twisted up nature of it.
Mm. I really liked the, or at least most of kind of the spore drive had its own sort of story arc in a way. It's like it starts out, obviously, they're spending so much time trying to get it working. And then it sort of becomes like such a big driver of the plot through both seasons, you know, and then we start figuring out that you know, using the mycelial network for travel is damaging the network itself. And yeah, it was like you start out and it's like, it's a basically a strange little contrivance to drive the plot, and like what spore drive or transwarp or like whatever you want to have, like it works fine. And yeah, the way they like wove it in and made it work, it felt very seamless to me, especially with like Stamets's techno babble about the space mushrooms and the mycelial network and everything. I think they did it all very well because it made it all just work. At least for me, when I was watching it, I was like, it's an entirely new idea to Star Trek, traveling via astral mycelial threads. But they have that wonderful way of taking everything seriously and playing it all straight when they're doing the techno babble stuff. It's just like, all right, I buy it. That's what it is in this universe. That's how it works. That's cool.
Yeah, I think the fact that they are taking this concept and having it be based on actual science is probably what made it so believable. It was kind of like taking what we know, taking it to the cutting edge, and then extrapolating from there on what could be possible in the future. And that is the best way to make something believable, I think, especially when you're dealing with real science.
Yeah, I talked about this quite a bit in the earlier episode that I guested on when we talked all about sort of the alien biology in Discovery. And I talked a lot about how I really liked the inclusion of the space mushrooms, the mycelium and all that sort of stuff, and how it related back to the way that fungi grow in real life. And like having the idea that they are riding these like mycelial threads, it's just cool. It's like, it's cool and it's fun.
I mean, it's a little fantastical, but at the same time, it's just, it was fun, and I don't really care for the haters about it.
You know, I don't care about the haters. How about that? Don't care. And that's why when someone loves to tell me their negative opinion, I just kind of look at them and go, don't care. Doesn't affect my enjoyment. Not sure what you're trying to do here, but don't care. And they'll just keep talking. I'm just like, yeah, still don't care. So maybe go find another person to talk to.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is about what you said, Liam, about it being fantastical is that's the whole thing. The future is has got to seem fantastical to us because what we take as commonplace would be fantastical to people from 50 years ago.
Exactly.
So it's all subjective. And so I like that they're going to a fantastical place. We should still feel that way when it comes to Star Trek. And now that we've got new Trek, I have that feeling again about it being fantastical, which I think is fantastic. I'm such a goober, I know. Okay, we have spent a heck of a lot of time on the Crossfield class.
I mean, it's the main hero ship of the show. I think that's fair.
That is fair. You're very, very right. That is fair. So I think we should move on to the Walker class then.
Yeah, so we only have one example of this in the show, which is, well, I guess technically we have two, because we have the USS Chenju and the ISS Chenju. And yeah, this is one that I like. You know, there were a few of, like, I guess what you would consider to be, like, established design conventions of Star Trek that they kind of broke with this in really interesting ways. I mean, the major one being the, like, underneath-mounted bridge module with, like, the great big panoramic windows, which, well, maybe I'm just a sucker for anything that's, like, a bit new and different, but, like, I saw that and I was like, oh, that's cool. Why has no one ever done that before?
Well, I mean, I don't know why starships, space boats, whatever you want to call them, don't move around their locations of the bridge. I mean, if everything's always going to be on the top of the bridge, they know where to shoot. So if it's on the underneath, oh, didn't know it was going to be there, it might last a little bit longer.
Or better yet, since you have view screens, why bother putting it anywhere near the outside of the ship anyway? Put it in the middle of the saucer section where it's well protected and no one can find it.
I mean, that would be too logical.
But yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I brought logic into this.
Stop being so Vulcan. Gosh.
So sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry.
So, yeah, the Walker class was named after Joseph Walker, who was a test pilot for NASA's Get Someone Into Space Before the Soviet Union program. So, like Nick was mentioning earlier, flew the X-15s, which is a semi-spacecraft that got to the outer edges of the atmosphere, which is kind of like a really high-powered rocket plane thing. And then the USS Shenzhou was named after the first Chinese spacecraft, which was launched in 1999 with an unmanned mission and then went on to provide many missions under different incarnations of the Shenzhou, and also apparently had an honorable feature in the film Gravity.
Oh, that is true. I have seen that movie. I saw it once, but I remember that now. Wow.
I mean, I don't remember the Shenzhou being in it, but I remember the film Gravity and it loving it and also terrified.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Same. One of my biggest fears is suffocation. So, yeah. So basically through most of the film, I was just, okay, what's going to happen now? Is she going to die now? Okay, she's still alive. So yeah, it was just me, 2 hours of intensity for me, but I did it. I felt the same way about The Abyss. I have a fear of drowning as well, which is also, again, a suffocation thing.
So the USS Shenzhou and the Walker class is a pretty old style ship at the point that we first see the Shenzhou in Vulcan Hello and Battle of the Binary Stars. What did you think of its lateral displacement transportation device?
Lateral vector transporters.
That's the word for it.
Yeah, with a great big kind of like speaker dish things on the side. It kind of looked a bit retro to me. Like maybe it just because it did look like giant speakers, you know, kind of things that you'd see at like an old like outdoor concert or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or like these, you know, big speaker stacks that currently sit in my parents' garage that my dad built when he was probably about my age. It was cool. And like, I have, you know, in my mind ideas to like one day run a like Star Trek Adventures RPG with some friends of mine. And I would love to set that like maybe just like 10 or 20 years after Enterprise, and just have them be on a ship and just make reference to like, oh, these are the brand new prototype lateral vector transporters. They're the latest and safest version of transportation.
Well, by then people won't be so afraid to use the transporters, and hopefully you'll actually have shields by then, because hull plating does exactly squat.
Exactly.
So, let's polarize the hull plating. Okay. Not that it'll do any good. Still going to get a bunch of holes in it. Yeah, they had some very holy, very holy episodes.
Team Discovery holes.
Yes.
It's good that you mentioned Enterprise, actually, Brandy, just because I know that, and just from looking at it, like I've got my model of the Shenzhou in my hands at the moment, and it's like there are very clear design parallels between this and like the NX class. Like it was definitely designed to look like a little bit of a kind of bridge between that and the sort of TOS era, which was kind of modern day stuff for like Discovery. I mean, I like that. Yes. It has the actual like satellite dish, like external satellite dish shaped like navigation deflector dish. Like, that's the thing that, to me, has always indicated that era of ship design, as opposed to, like, you know, like, Enterprise A onwards, where it's just, like, the glowing blue circle. It is, again, a very kind of, like, I want to say, like, Greebly design. Like, there are lots of little intricate details and stuff, and it's quite angular, and it feels very, again, like, industrial, which, to me, makes it actually feel, like, less advanced than like Constitution class and like the, you know, Excelsior and like the later ones that come along that are a bit more kind of sleek and clean in their design. And like the way they look, this one's got like what almost look like open panels and stuff to like the, you know, the workings inside.
Yeah. It's the working class ship.
It is. That's kind of how it feels. Like it's like a workhorse.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a tough little ship.
Captained by the wonderful Philippa Georgiou. The Emperor is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, I'm so happy that they brought her back into it as her mirror counterpart, because she looks like she is having the time of her life. She's just having so much fun, because I have never seen her in a part quite like this. So It's really fun for me to see her do something that is completely different to me, and she's obviously relishing every moment.
I don't really have anything else to say about the Shenzhou, do you guys?
I just really like the design. It is probably one of my favorites from all of Star Trek now. There's just a lot about it that I just like. It's kind of, overall, it's got quite sort of simple lines to it. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's like from
Are you having a moment there, Nick?
A little bit. It's just like from everything I've already said, it's like the kind of industrial feel to it and the kind of callbacks of like design elements from like Enterprise and sort of TOS and everything like that. Yeah, it's just quite a cool looking, fun design. I think a lot of good work went into making it.
I agree. So let's move on to the Constitution class, which has more than one famous ship by this name, but pretty much all the same ship, mostly. The USS Enterprise!
Woo! Yeah, so the Constitution class is most likely named after the Constitution.
Imagine
that. Now, the Enterprise is a name. Goes back many, many, many years for a lot of ships, right back to the 1700s, maybe, something like that.
1775.
There we go. 1775. In Star Trek world, it is most likely that it was named after all those ships. There's obviously the space shuttle Enterprise as well, and then also following the line of the NX-01. In real life, the reason why the Enterprise was called the Enterprise is because Gene Roddenberry liked the USS Enterprise CV-6, which was an Enterprise carrier of, surprisingly, the Yorktown class. So that's where the Yorktown gets its name from as well. In real life, you have the Space Shuttle Enterprise that was named after the 1701, which was probably named after the Space Shuttle Enterprise in-universe.
There is also a nuclear vessel, which I'm not 100% sure is still in service, called the Enterprise, which they visit in Star Trek 4.
The Wessel.
The Voyage Home. Nuclear Wessel. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to give you my strong opinion on the Enterprise. I don't like the 1701 in the original series. It looks like a bunch of painted cardboard tubes. And I love the Enterprise in the Discovery. And now, this is going to get me a lot of angry comments, I can see now. But that's my opinion.
Grab your torches and pitchforks, people.
To be fair, having watched the original series growing up, TV was a lot grainier back then.
So you couldn't tell it was a blatant kitchen roll tube.
Exactly. And when the Okudas I believe Dave Rossi, if I'm remembering that correctly, did the remake, not really remake, that's not what I'm looking for, the HD gloss, let's call it that, the remastering, that's the word I'm looking for, of the original series, that they certainly made that old ship look a lot better. So they didn't do it to the point where you're like, oh, well, that's obviously, you know, been digitally altered. They still made it fit within that same time period, but they made it look like, oh, it's not just a bunch of rolls of cardboard painted with some little lights stuck in it.
I mean, so. I suppose you've got to be fair. They did make those kitchen roll tubes look quite nice, but I'm a baby of the digital generation, I guess.
Yeah. Rub it in how much younger you are than everybody else here. Well, mostly just me.
I'm only 6 months younger than you.
So I'm the old one here. Got it.
Okay. No, you're Granddaddy Brandy.
It's true. I answer to Granddaddy Brandy. So or Your Highness. I also answer to that. Anyway.
Well, Your Highness, what was your thoughts on the redesigned sort of Enterprise?
For Discovery? Oh, I cried. I cried. Big time.
Yeah.
Just like, she's so pretty. I was just like, it's the Enterprise, but it's so pretty at the same time. It's like taking that classic design and then making it look like it fits in that same world as Discovery was just like,
I mean, they did do a really good job of it. And then that bridge.
It was amazing.
That bridge. Oh, I mean, yeah, I'm not one for TOS, but that bridge was amazing.
Yeah, back in the days when you had hand railings, like you should on a freaking starship. So, railings, people! Railings and seatbelts! Safety first!
Safety first on the love boat. I mean, the space boat.
Damn. The space love boat. No, that sounds wrong. The love space boat.
I mean, the...
Yeah, there we go. That's
I
better.
I mean, orange. I love the color orange. Even if Philippa... Georgia. Yeah. Orange, even though Philippa hated it.
Yeah. Orange? Yuck. Isn't that what she said?
It was, yeah.
Basically, yuck.
I think... Sorry, Nick, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, that the interior redesign especially was just gorgeous. It's like, I don't want to get into a discussion of, like, comparing it to, like, the redesign of the Enterprise from the Kelvin timeline movies, but whereas they just basically kind of just redid the bridge from the ground up, and it looks great in its own right. It's very cool. But this looked like such a brilliant update and, like, tribute to the original. Because it kept so many of those design elements and just, like, brought it forward to something that looks cool to, you know, modern eyes watching a TV show in 2018, 2019.
Which goes along with the dreaded C words, continuity and canon. Done a great job of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say they have. And, like, you guys have already, like, said it all, like, the exterior redesign is, like, it's still... You know, from, you know, most angles and everything, it looks exactly like what it's meant to be. You know, that it is the Constitution class USS Enterprise. It's just, you know, a few bits that are more detailed and updated. My personal, very, like, nerdy thing is I wish that they had kept it with, like, straight engine pylons instead of the swept ones.
I was going to say, they did do a reprofiling of the nacelle.
Yeah, pylons, but that's, like, a very, very tiny, silly thing. That's just me, because it is a really cool-looking redesign.
I thought it was beautiful. I didn't quite cry when it came on the screen, like Mandy. Oh my God, I can't get anyone's names right today.
It's okay. At least you're not calling me Amy. I've been called Amy so many times.
Like Brandy was saying, I didn't cry when it came on the screen, but it was a little bit emotional just because it is, you know, Star Trek, like the Star Trek symbol, basically, the Star Trek ship. But I think it was helped along in that sense by the music when they aired that at the end of season one.
To be fair, I started crying before the ship actually appeared.
Well, when they said, oh, it's Pike, because, and the 1-7 come on the screen.
No, not even that, because they're like, we're receiving a distress call, and you're looking at, I don't remember whose station, Bryce. And it's like, the registry's coming in now, and you see NCC-17, and I'm like,
it's here!
Yeah, I started crying at that moment, and then when they said Captain Pike, I'm like, I just dissolved. It was just the best.
It did bring back a lot of emotion, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of emotion, especially for me, because I did not expect that at all. I did not expect to see Captain Pike. I didn't expect to ever see Spock. You know, I just the end of season one brought so much promise, and I wasn't sure I wanted to see these things until I got them. And then I'm like, yes, I want this. Bring me more. Thank you.
Can I make a side note on something? When Discovery airs for season 3, in each episode show that we do, can we have a section called Brandy's Cry Point?
Yes.
I feel like somebody needs to make a jingle for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk to Littlefield about that.
Yes. jingle.
He's great at those.
All right, we'll get great CDL those. To make a jingle for it. That would be hilarious.
Yep.
Okay.
Anything else that we want to say about our lovely girl, the Enterprise?
I don't know. I feel like we're underserving it by not talking more, but I don't think there's that much more to say except that it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. And I think part of that is because the Enterprise has existed since Star Trek began. And so there have already been so many things said about it. And so it's not really necessary to go into the same level of discussion that we did for Discovery, because we've never seen a ship like Discovery. Whereas we have seen the Enterprise before, but it's lovely to have that new version to talk about.
One thing that we did see on the Enterprise that we hadn't seen in original bits and pieces of Star Trek is the DOT-7s.
The dots, yes.
I thought they were great. Like, yes. You've got a massive starship. I like the dots. You've got something that can go, you know, five times the speed of light or however fast it goes. And all of this technology, why wouldn't you have little droids that will go out and fix things? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you?
It makes sense that they would have, like, little service, you know, robot drone things. And you just said droids. It's so weird that that has become such, like, just the word. And I'm trying to figure out they would never be referred to that actually, like, on screen, because obviously, like, droids is specifically a Star Wars term.
Yeah.
But it's become such part of our, like, just our cultural idea of, like, what a little robot is.
Mm. Well, you know, they're basically just, like, what, the 23rd century Roombas?
The what?
Basically, yeah. I think they probably are.
You don't know what a Roomba is.
Is that, like, the Hoovers that sit on the floor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually watched a video that was like 7 or 8 minutes long of a dog laying on a kitchen floor and the Roomba vacuuming around the dog, and it would hit the dog at certain points and then turn and go on and then hit the dog and then turn and move on. And it went around that dog like 4 or 5 times just, and the dog was just dead still. Mm. It's just like, yeah, my daily massage, yes.
I think I need to get one of those and call it a DOT-7.
I've just seen videos of cats riding on a Roomba as if it's like a palanquin.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's because cats are amazing. Mm. And without those dots in Discovery on the Enterprise, we wouldn't have Sassy Dot in Ephraim and Dot.
Exactly.
That is so true. Gotta love a Sassy Dot.
Every franchise needs to have at least one sassy robot.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the sassiest one in Star Wars was that one in Solo.
Absolutely.
I loved it.
Yes, she was amazing. And now she is the Millennium Falcon. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Sorry, guys, if you haven't seen Solo, I recommend it. It's a fun ride. Totally diverged. Ooh. You can cut that out. Anyway.
All right. So do we want to move on to the next ship?
Sure. So let's go to I was just going to go down the list then. So the Nimitz class. Now, I am familiar with the Nimitz aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
That
it's named after the same person.
There's this. Yep, Chester Nimitz. It's actually featured in a movie called The Final Countdown about this ship that accidentally encounters a time portal in the ocean and ends up in World War II. And they have the option to stop what happened at Pearl Harbor.
Oh.
Because they have these advanced planes on this aircraft carrier. And they end up deciding not to do that. Because if they were to stop the attack, it would have this domino effect of losing the war. So, yeah, it was an interesting movie. Very 80s.
Yeah.
but as a,
yes,
as a kid, I really enjoyed it because, again, ships. You've got a ship that has planes on it. What could be better than that?
Randy, I feel like you and I are of a similar mind in that sense, because I have just spent the past few evenings teaching myself to play a modern, like, sea shanty song about the giant oil supercarrier, the SO Northumbria. It is a great song by, I think they're a Canadian folk punk band called the Dreadnoughts. And they did this.
Oh, yeah, I heard of the Dreadnoughts.
This great song called Roll Northumbria. And, like, I heard it a few times, like, that's a good song. I need to learn to play this.
I'm going to look that up. I'm going to put it on my phone really quickly so that I don't forget after we've had this podcast. There they are, right there. Okay, cool. Now I'll remember.
So, the Nimitz class, as Brandy's already suggested, is named after Chester Nimitz, who was a fleet admiral in World War II, who was promoted to the position of Chief of Pacific Naval Forces after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And the primary ship that we see of the Nimitz class is the USS Europa, with NCC what, Nick?
NCC 1648.
There we go, that. And it's named after the moon of Jupiter, Europa. No, Saturn. Is Europa Jupiter or Saturn?
Europa is Saturn. Is Jupiter.
It's Jupiter. Jupiter has a ton of moons. Yeah.
It's one of the four Galilean moons.
Jupiter, yeah. The only thing I ever remember is that the moons of Uranus are after Shakespeare characters or something.
Yes.
All right. I will repeat that. So, the ship of the Nimitz class that we see is the USS Europa, NCC, I've already forgotten what it was, but that's okay. NCC what, Nick?
1648.
Thank you. And speculations that extraterrestrial life could live there. So, we never know. They may have found some life come Trek time.
Or you could watch The Expanse.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've only seen seasons 1 and 2, and they've been to Ganymede, and I don't know about any more than that.
It was just my plug to say watch The Expanse. So, season 4 out on Amazon Prime in the US.
Also something I quite like about that show that we've mentioned before, because they try to go as realistic as possible. One of the cool things I liked in that is when they're on one of the Martian warships, the bridge for that is in a bunker in the middle of the ship. Mm. Okay.
Yes.
What were we just saying earlier? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, so you were saying the USS Europa. This was Admiral Brett Anderson's flagship. This is the one that it was even in that famous scene from one of the early trailers for Discovery, gets rammed by the Klingon Cleave ship.
I loved that scene.
That was such a good scene.
Yeah.
And it was such a good tease to have that in the trailer, because we'd heard nothing about a USS Europa. And then you just see this, thing crashing into the ship, and you see it, specifically the shot on, the name and the registry, and you're like, USS Europa? What's it? We've heard about the Discovery. I think maybe we'd heard about the Shenzhou by then as well. It's like, is there another ship? Is this going to be a show, that's just, going across all of these different ships? What's gonna happen?
Yeah, and that ship is big.
Yeah.
Really big. Not quite as big as, I can't remember the name of the ship in Into Darkness that the Admiral builds in secret, yada, yada, yada. That thing's gigantic. Yeah. So it made me think of that ship, but I can't remember the name, nor can I be bothered to look it up, because I did not like Into Darkness. So.
Now, Nick, you've got written down that it's similar to a 4 nacelled Miranda class.
Yeah, it does. A few of these ship designs very much take cues from that kind of Miranda class design. So you've got the saucer in the front with a little bit of the, I think I've heard it referred to as the roll bar on the top, which is just that sort of wing. It looks like a spoiler on the back of a someone's Holden. but instead of the there you go, that's a GM or Chrysler for American listeners.
Yes.
But yeah, it's got this the Europa is another one that sort of changes where they put the bridge, which I thought was quite cool, and they've got that sort of up on the roll bar thing, which is probably sort of an impractical place to have it if it's going to be going into combat, because it's an easy target. But it does have that sort of quite elevated, almost imperious position that is quite fitting for an Admiral's flagship, I guess. And then you have the sort of 4 nacelles in the, again, very much like the Miranda class style, where it just has the very squat, vertical pylons hanging down with the nacelles underneath, and then 2 more sort of on top of those. I'm demonstrating with my hands, but of course, listeners, you can't see this. But that's just what I do.
Yes.
Yeah. Another very interesting design. It's got a few almost cutouts in the saucer section, and a very thin navigation deflector on the front of the saucer, which is again very reminiscent of the NX-01. So there's a lot of different design elements coming in.
All right, gentlemen. Well, We are just about at the hour mark already, and we haven't even talked about all of the Federation and Starfleet ships that we were going to. So I propose that we break this up into a series, and we continue in 2 weeks' time with part two of Starfleet ships and finish that off, and then come back with part three and talk about some other things not in Starfleet, like some Klingon ships.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
That sounds like grab you guys.
That sounds good to me.
Because I love talking about ships.
All right. I'm happy with that.
Fantastic. All right. Well, then, it has been super fun talking about Love Space Boats, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network, so here's a quick listen to some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Can you please sing The Love Boat again?
The space boat soon will be leaving... I've already forgotten it. Just take it from the earlier in the episode and insert it. Leaving Space Dock 41. I don't remember. Just pick one.
That's going to be I'm going to completely not bother putting in a previously on, and I'm just going to put that in there.
Space, exciting and new. Come aboard. We've drafted you. And space won't hurt anymore. It's an open door to the Klingon War. The space boat. Sorry.
I love it.
Brandy, you are a
I'm
treasure.
Shocked I actually. Thank you.
I don't know whether to leave that in the main bulk of the text or put that at the end. And by text, I mean
you can put it wherever you want. Free boat, freebie, free boat.
Free boat.
That's got to be our stinger.
Oh my goodness. I'm coming down with the vapors, you guys. All right.
Okay.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Oh, let me think. What's an interesting Star Trek sound
effect? Phasers?
See, that's tough because how do you make a phaser sound? I don't know if you can make that with the human.
Or you can do photon torpedoes.
I'll just be the one that's pew, pew, pew.
Oh, pew, pew, pew. Yeah. The Discovery phasers. Okay, cool. Awesome choice. And to come back to the point, I think I'm deleting this scene.
Literary Treks.
What was it that caused him not to be with his Paul immediately after coming out? What was it that made that relationship strange? Yeah. And I think it was that Culber had really lost himself in a lot of ways. And while Paul was his anchor, when he came back to Paul, Paul had learned something by losing you. And I think he became the Paul that Hugh needed. And I think that scared you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Until he sort of found himself again.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Because we've never seen all of those hairy mud bots again.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, I would appreciate, though, like a mention in history in season 3. It's like, oh yeah, here's this time where the whole galaxy was crawling with these different hairy mud bots, and rounding them up took years.
That's what brought down the Federation. Hairy mud bots.
That was it. It was hairy mud bots.
Hairy mud bots. Oh no.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
We got a lot of answers in this episode, which was really surprising to me. So, there, you know, who's Dodge and whatnot. Like, that's a thing I expected to find out in episode 10 going into this show, right? And here we are, you know, halfway through episode 1 and we know who Dodge is. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I'm, you know, that's cool that we're getting a lot of information. But getting that information is opening up more questions.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
And if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Despite what you may think, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are so many ways for you to do that. The best place, as always, to join in the longer and larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just go to the search field on Facebook, type in Babel, B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. But if you'd like to send us an email, we also accept those. You can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That comes right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. So, Liam, when you are not egging me on to sing, where can people find you?
In an audience watching you sing. So you can find me elsewhere on the network, co-hosting To The Journey, a Star Trek You can find me elsewhere on the network, hosting To The Journey, a Star Trek Voyager podcast. You can find me on Twitter at LS74656, and you can find me in the BABEL conference on Facebook. So, Nick, when you're not designing your own spaceboat, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You have no idea how many of my own starships I designed when I was a teenager.
Oh, can we see them?
If I find any, I will show you next time. I have one that I built out of Lego that's still sitting around somewhere. It was my concept for the Enterprise G.
Oh, cool.
Excellent.
So you can find me on the Babel Conference and also on Twitter at PunkZoologist, and I am on Instagram at PunkRockZoologist. So, Brandy, when you are not sailing the Space Love Boat to Starbase 47, where can people find you?
You can find me lurking in the Babel Conference as always. You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. Brandy is spelled with an I, 12 is a number. You can find me on Live from the Edge when new Discovery episodes are going to drop. And I also do a podcast with my fabulous husband, Dave, called the Dark Corner Podcast, where we talk about whatever the heck we want from sort of a darker point of view. And this is something you guys don't know about, and I'm announcing for the first time ever. I'm also starting, under the Dark Corner banner, a short solo podcast called Headcanon, where I start with a specific subject, probably all going to be Trek-related, let's be honest, with Picard coming up.
Picard on the space
Oh, guys.
With Vash.
And basically, it's going to be me. It's going to be stream of consciousness and probably no editing except for what my husband puts in at the beginning and end as far as credits. So you will find that under the feed for the Dark Corner podcast, once again called Headcanon. I made a joke about it on a live show we did on Dan Gunther's YouTube page. YouTube channel, rather. And I'm just like, no, I think I'm going to actually do this. So there we are.
I love it. Nice.
And you can find it all at darkcornerpodcast.com.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That is patreon.com/trekfm. To get all the details, perks include early access to episode producer credits, exclusive content, and more. Available all through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute all of these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our associate producers, those being Norman Seelau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Paleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett, Chris Tribuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you all for supporting Trek FM and The Edge.
They're good little engineers and as well, aren't they? Our associate producers.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. Like a good ship.
Good ship.
Good ship. Lollipop.
I know you were going to do that. I heard it. I heard it before you even started singing it.
What a musical episode we have this week, Brandy and Nick. And by week, I mean Fortnite.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, thank you all for listening. And join us next time to see what's happening on the edge of Federation space.
The fun thing about Michelle Georgiou, well, it's not the fun thing, it's just a fact about her, is that she's married.
You mean Philippa Georgiou or Michelle Yeoh?
What did I say?
Michelle Georgiou.
Oh.